This is the regular city council meeting, and it's Monday, September 28th, 2015, 7 p.m.
Everyone, I'd like to welcome you to tonight's September 28th regular Othello City Council meeting. If you'd all please rise. Angel Garza is going to lead us in a short prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Dear God, we come before you, Father, this moment, Lord. We thank you for this beautiful day, Lord, this beautiful evening, Lord. We just ask wisdom from you, Lord, and help us, Father, with all the decisions we're going to be making tonight. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Item 1.3 on our agenda is roll call. To my attention that Eugene Bain, Councilman Eugene Bain, has been unavoidably detained. And so I would ask for a motion to excuse Eugene Bain from tonight's proceedings.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
I have a motion made and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Going to move to item 1.4, citizen input. This is the period of time where citizens have up to 5 minutes to address the city council with any issues that they may have. When I recognize you, I already have one person who's requested to be on. If there's anybody else, I'll raise your hand. I'll recognize you. Please step to the microphone, state your name and address for the record, and then you have up to 5 minutes to address the council. And we will start with Mr. Eric Perez. Welcome tonight, Eric.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Eric Perez, and I live here in the city of Othello, 620 Rose Drive. And I have an issue with the apartments that they built up a couple years ago in Rose Place. The people that live in those apartments, they excessive, speeding through the area. We don't no longer allow the children to go outside and play because of that. Also, the tenants from those apartments, they used to walk from behind my house, and we have to put a fence on. But now they do it in the front yard, and I think they're not being respectful to your neighbors around. And we have other issues. The other day, I was going to have an accident with one of them because I was coming out of my driveway, and he decided to pass me on the right, and he didn't even wait for me to finish, getting on the road and continue. And not only that, there is no stop signs between Cherry Lane and Rose Drive, and most people, they don't make any yield or anything like that. They just continue straight forward. They don't even look on the sides. And that's a current issue since 3 years ago. And I have another neighbor, but he's not here currently, that he's gonna join me too. And I already have spoke with other neighbors too, and they are not happy about it because our property values, they have gone down because of that. Basically, there's a house there that has been for sale for the last 3 years, and they cannot even sell it. And they leave clearing the yards, properties, and that's a continued issue that we have with them. And I want them to either create a different entrance through Columbia Street and 7th Avenue, or have them buy our properties because we cannot sell them.
Eric, I see you gave the council several solutions.
Yes. The first solution that I give them is to either build up a fence on Rose Place between 1115 property and 1190 property in the apartments. It has to be an eight feet tall fence. So in order for them to stop going through there and have a different entrance for them to Columbia. And the second solution will be buying our properties.
Okay. Council, yes.
I got a question. Do they speed all the time
Or like at a certain time, like after work, or?
Certain times, in the morning most likely, when everybody is going, you know, to work and school, that's when it happens, and also on the weekends, when they have, I guess, they have visitors coming to their houses, and they throw parties, and they have loud music after 10 p.m., and they leave the, you know, beer bottles, glasses everywhere, pretty much, and we have to be cleaning that too.
Do we have a noise ordinance after 10?
Or nuisance, you know, type ordinance?
I think you bring up a whole range of issues. Mm-hmm. Basically, your complaint is that your neighborhood was a nice, quiet neighborhood until
those apartments.
Until those duplexes were built on,
yes.
Like right next to you or just down the street from your property. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's more or less the nature of your complaint?
Yes.
And so with that came all these other things that you're talking about. The littering, the not respecting property, the loud music after 10 p.m., and then visitors parking in your driveways.
Yes.
So those are the complaints. Have you spoken with the property owner? Do you know who the property owner
No,
is?
No, I don't know who the property owner is. I work for Lineage here in Otello, and sometimes I don't even have time because I normally get up at 8:45 p.m., mm-hmm. And I've been getting around with my neighbors because everybody doesn't agree with all that was happening right now. Mm-hmm. And I haven't put everything in detail, and I haven't even searched who is the owner of those apartments, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
Bill, I believe those belong to John Warling, and he was here supporting our registering of the apartments. Do you know if he ever registered those?
Yes, he did.
So we got track of who's in them right now.
So is there any remedy offered by the staff? Yes, go ahead.
And I apologize, this is the first I've heard of this. I would like some time to look into it. But what I'm hearing is quite a few different issues, mm-hmm. that we can use different solutions to fix. Mr. Warling, I believe, is the property owner of these apartments. They are crime-free rental housing. He was one of the first licensees to sign them up, and he is getting reports from us of any activity that's being reported to us or that we're responding to at these locations. A couple of these stop sign areas are stop signs that we have identified that we would like in place. But what I would like to do is come back to council with a more comprehensive recommendation to address more of the issues, not just try to wing it right now.
Yes, mm-hmm. I think that's wise. Would that be satisfactory to you, Mr. Perez?
Yeah, it will be okay with us. If I already put the complaint to the police station too, it was like a month ago, and okay. I just want them to, you know, to find a solution for it.
Okay, well, I would recommend you leave your phone number with the police chief before you leave tonight.
Okay.
And as he conducts a review of what's, you know, going on, and that would give the city a better chance to properly respond. Potentially, you and the neighborhood would be able to work something out with Mr. Warling. He probably isn't aware of everything that's been going on, and so it would be unfair to council to try and make some kind of decision tonight without, you know, talking to him, and also to without conducting our own investigation.
Okay.
So, does that sound fair enough?
Yeah, that sounds fair.
Good. Thank you very much for coming. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, that will be it. Thank you, though, for listening.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Perez. Is there any other citizen here tonight? Yes. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, my name is Council Mayor. Thank you for having me. Larry McCordy, I live on Catalpa Street. We had our first block party the other night. It went really, really well. And got to meet some of the officers. 2 days after that, was sitting on the patio and the door knocked. My wife went to the front door and there was a policeman there. I had gone out and opened the side garage door, the little walk-through, and just to cool off the garage. He had noticed that, come and knocked on the door and made sure that, didn't know for sure if we was home or not. He noticed the door was open, and I tell you what, I appreciated that very much.
Very good. Thank you, Larry. Is there any other citizen here tonight who is interested or has interest in addressing the city council? Okay. Let's move on to item number two, approval of tonight's agenda. This time I entertain a motion to approve our agenda tonight.
I'll make that motion.
Second. We have a motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item three is our consent agenda. This time I would entertain a motion to approve our consent agenda for tonight.
Make that motion.
I'll second.
Motion's made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Moving on to item 4.1, Hampton 14th Avenue C1 Zone Public Hearing. As the council recalls, we were going to, during the annexation hearing, public hearing, we were going to approve the zoning at the same zone change at the same time, but we didn't have a legal description. And so tonight's public hearing, we're going to hear from staff. So let me open the public hearing tonight at 7:12 p.m. and we will hear a presentation from Travis, our community development director.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Travis Goddard, and I'm the community development director for the city of Othello. And just to refresh you, the mayor stole some of my thunder, but this is a follow-up from the July 27th meeting where you reviewed the direct petition annexation, which was passed by the council at that meeting. It included a zoning request, which requires a second hearing under RCWs. And the C1 was accepted as the interim zoning for that annexation. You might remember this graphic, which basically said at the hearing you were deciding on the annexation and you were accepting a first hearing for the zoning request, and that the second one, according to state code, had to be 30 days apart, which is why we're here today. And a reminder, if this is the property we're looking at, this is Wahidas, this is the CDHA site, and to the south of that is the property that's subject to the annexation and rezone. Here's the zoning in the area. We have commercial to the north, that's conditional upon development as a clinic, commercial to the west, and we have residential to the north, northeast, northwest. Beside the site. And public notice has been completed for this hearing in accordance with the RCW 35A14330. It specifically requires that we do publication in the newspaper. We did an additional level of notice, which included mailing to the neighbors within 500 feet, because at the last hearing we had a neighbor claim they didn't get notice. And so we covered that as an additional time. And as a result of that public notice, no additional public comment was received on this case. So we're recommending that you accept and approve the C1 zoning for the annexed property. And the attachment in your packet was the revised ordinance with revised dates and the complete legal description for the property that is being annexed.
Thank you, Travis. Council, do you have any questions of Travis? We're pretty clear on what we're doing here. Okay, thank you, Travis. This time, I'd like to open the public hearing for public testimony. Is there anyone here tonight who would like to speak in support of this annexation? Please raise your hand. Is there anybody here tonight who is neutral to the proposal and would like to speak? Is there anyone here tonight who is in opposition of the proposed annexation and zoning change? Okay, hearing none. This time I'll close public testimony and the public hearing at 7:15 p.m. And now at this time I would entertain a motion to approve this ordinance in its final form.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Travis. Moving on to item 4.2 on our agenda is the public right-of-way agreement with Augustine Alanis. Travis has a presentation.
Again, thank you. The applicant in this case is proposing to place a sign at the Alanis Strip Mall at 601 South First Avenue. Originally, I had looked up the two parcels and they had different address numbers, but the actual building permit application is for 601 South Avenue, so I figured I better clarify that. The contractor excavated the footing before the utility location and the right-of-way permit was completed, and so Public Works asked them to stop. They applied for the right-of-way permit, and the locating of the utilities was done. And the Public Works director was concerned at that time when they spotted the problem that they were within the right-of-way for First Avenue. Here's a picture of the site. It shows the existing sidewalk, the existing gravel or cobble area for their stormwater system. You can see the foundation, the hole for the foundation there on the left. Here is a closer picture from the backside. Sorry, I'll back up real quick. So this gives you an idea of it's about 6 to 7 feet back from the edge of the sidewalk. And on the backside, what this is showing is that it is moved as far back possible before they get into the paving for the parking area that's there. And what the Public Works Director determined after doing his site study, or doing the location of the center line of the right-of-way and the edge of the right-of-way, and that is 11 feet of this 16-foot foundation is going to be within the right-of-way. They took a look at the utility boxes, which are over here to the left, and then there's some more work that comes up and actually feeds the building off to the right of this picture. And they determined that there were no immediate concerns with the utilities that are in the ground. And so, to put it in context, this is the existing sign on the property, and you can see the other swale. And so this is the driveway to get into the little grocery store. And so it's farther down the block. So it's pretty consistent with the existing signage that's on the site. This is a picture of what the site actually, or the sign actually looks like. So it's about 17, 16 feet tall. It has two large steers that are, or two large bulls that are going to be atop the sign. And it was actually oversized for the area of signage. So what I've conditioned their building permit on the removal of this arch, so it would just be more of a squared off bottom here, which gets them under the figure that they need to make it meet our signage codes. And oh, sorry, one more thing. So this will have little small squares for each of the individual businesses that locates in the strip mall. And the sign is within the First Street Avenue, or the First Avenue right of way. Public Works has found that that current foundation looks like it's acceptable, provided that the owner acknowledges that the sign maintenance is still their responsibility, even though it's in the city's property, and the sign could be subject to removal. So the document that was prepared for him helps them understand that they are required to do the maintenance on the sign and keep it up, make sure it's safe. And it also has clauses in it that indicates the city can give them 30 days worth of notice, at which time they have to move it at their own expense, or they need to move it back, in which case they could dig out one of those parking stalls and move it back and replace it in the same location. But it's clearly written out in the document that these two issues from Public Works are addressed. And so The other last thing I wanted to add, and that is, there are a couple different versions of older zoning maps around, and the Alani Strip Mall appears to be zoned Commercial 2, and so they had a tenant try and move into that building, and in the Commercial 2 zone, retail stores are not permitted, and so they applied for a zone change from C2 to C1, which allows retailers in it. That's theoretically the right zone for that property, and older maps appear to show it as C1, and at some point it went to C2, and I don't know why. So that should go to the Planning Commission in October. To give you an idea of what I'm talking about is, you see the four lots of the plat, and for some reason the top 50 feet of this lot seems to have been zoned Commercial 1 for retail, and the structure actually goes from Lot 2 all the way down to Lot 4. So, you know, three quarters of the building has the wrong zoning on it for them to do retail activities. So we're working to fix that with them. And to give you an idea of the aerial, this gives you the idea of what's on Broadway. First Avenue is all C1 except for this particular structure for some reason, and there's residential over to the east. But you'll be seeing that after the Planning Commission reviews it and gives you a recommendation. And with that, we recommend approval for the license agreement, at which time the mayor would be authorized to sign the agreement and put it into effect. Any questions?
I got a question for Terry. How wide is the right-of-way there? From the curb back that way.
It'd be from the center of the road to
25 foot right away.
So it's 50 feet from center line.
Got a question too. I believe he was issued a building permit for this back in August,
wasn't it? He may have applied for his building permit in August.
Okay, would this been caught through the permitting process if he had a site plan that was should have been filed with it?
Yes, what happened in this case is he had an engineer drawing that came to us in August, and it was put on hold. The building official had not reviewed it, but Public Works spotted that they were doing work without the co-location, and by the time the building official responded, we were waiting for the co-locations to be done, and Terry had gone out and measured the right-of-way and determined that they needed these applications.
Anything further, Council? So, hearing none, I would entertain a motion to enter into this license agreement with Augustine Alanis, authorizing the mayor to sign.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? We have a motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Travis. Item 4.3 on our agenda, award of well number 9 pump station, and with us is the city's engineer, Jesse Calgar from Burrell & Associates.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. So the city received a quote for the pump station work for Well 9, and I'll just kind of check down through the agenda memo items here. If you've had a chance to look at it, you'll know what I'm saying, but it's kind of all the pertinent details. So Schneider Water Services submitted a quote. The quote includes constructing the building, the piping, the chlorination system for Well 9, and it also includes the site work and fencing for the site. We've reviewed the quote package. We find it to be complete and in order, and We checked the contractor's references, we discussed it with city staff, and find all the parts and pieces to be in order. The quote was for a total of $543,125.09, and that's including sales tax. So the pump station was broken into two packages. The first one was for the pumping equipment, so it was the well pump, the motor, the VFD, the motor control center. So that quote's already in. That's the item here that the city's already awarded to Schneider Water Services for $232,000. This second portion here for $543,000 brings the total for the pump station for well 9 up to $775,000. Our total estimated construction budget for the well 9 is $900,000, leaving that $125,000 in contingency if there's unforeseen items during construction. So our conclusion was that the quote is within our construction budget. It's appears to be reasonable for the work that's there. It has the advantage of having Schneider Water Services doing both the pump work and being the general contractor for the whole project, so you don't have two contractors coordinating there. The city has the authority under their emergency declaration to award this based on quotes. So based on our discussions with city staff, our recommendation is for the council to award it to Schneider Water Services. And so with that, I'd like to give the council an opportunity to ask some more questions if you have them, and we'll try and clear it up for you.
Council, you have any questions about this?
I'd just like to see a schematic of the pump house.
You know, I've got a paper one I can give you, or I mean, I can show you.
There is the overhead.
Yes. Just a
or
do you have an overview of what the pump house is going to include?
Like the piping house?
Well, like you have a disinfection room and an MCC room and then the pump room?
Sure. If I want to point out something here quick and then we'll...
Okay.
So this here is a removable building. So the well is actually right underneath this. The pump suspends from the pedestal there. There's a motor on top that's been the pump. And then it discharges out here, goes into the building. So here's the front of the building. So you've got the chlorine room right here, and then you have your entrance to the main pump room where the MCC and everything is. And you've got radio antennas, you've got an operation light here. This little guy here is essentially a surge suppressing setup, so you discharge to that initially, and then ease the flow of the water into the system with pump control valve.
What's the distance from the pump center line of the motor sitting on the top of the pump to the building?
So down is 12 feet, so from the edge of the discharge head to the building there is 12 feet. Okay, so here's the elevation view of the well. The motor suspended, the well, the pump going down the well, discharges out into here. This is that pump control valve that I was talking about, so I guess the plan view here comes over. Initially, this valve is open, and this check valve here in the system is closed. So it discharges out of here, clears up any, you know, any stagnant water that might be in the well, and that, and then, after a certain amount of time has passed, this valve slowly closes. As pressure builds, it overcomes system pressure, it opens up this check valve, it goes out of here. And then the running room setup was pretty neat, actually. Like, so it goes from here over into the chlorine injection setup. So it goes over and it goes down. So this is where it goes down too. So it comes down over here, and your chlorine injection is actually down here. And the advantage of this is that it's all not open to the elements and everything. So you can do all your chlorine barrel in here, you have your chlorine injection right here throughout the system. It's easier to maintain than anything.
So this is a first class service then?
Well, you know, we worked with your public works staff on it, and you know, we had some ideas. They had some very specific things they wanted, and I think we came up with a great stuff. So
mm-hmm. Very good. Anything else? Okay. It's a recommendation of Rell and Associates that we award the well number 9 pump station project to Schneider Water Services. I'd entertain that motion right now.
Make that motion.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Jesse.
Sure.
But you're not done. That's the small water system consolidation feasibility studies. Okay.
So, earlier this year, the Department of Health brought it to the city's attention that they had a grant program for feasibility studies for small water systems, or I should say large water systems that might absorb smaller water systems. And DOH created this grant program because smaller independent water systems tend to be sort of public health headaches for them. They tend to have fewer resources and are just harder for the systems to maintain. Qualified operators, all of these things. So anyway, whenever a small system can be consolidated into a larger system, Department of Health sees it as a win because the systems become more reliable. They've got the resources of the larger system to maintain them. So anyway, the city's community development director saw this program and said, hey, we should try and apply for a few of these, see what we can get. And totally ran the table on them, got 8 of these grants, totaling about $200,000. And so there's 8 water systems, mostly west and a little bit south of Othello, that the Department of Health has provided grant funding for the city to look at consolidating these systems. And what these feasibility studies would include would be an inventory of the system, documenting existing deficiencies, defining options for connecting the system to Othello, and estimating the cost of improvements. There's an additional bonus for the city in this, in that because these are all kind of co-located in that area, we'll be able to do some, it's more than comprehensive planning. So Travis is already doing the comprehensive planning for the city as a whole, but we'll be able to focus specifically on being able to serve water to these areas, and that would involve eventually absorbing these systems. So what we have on the figure here is 4 of the systems. We can scroll it down so you can see the other 4. And it's got a few of the major details about each of those, number of connections, whether or not they have a well. And we had a meeting with the utility committee on this one as well, and Councilman Lawless pointed out, you know, where the existing water mains would be helpful, so we went ahead and added those. They're on the right edge of the screen up there, or I should say the east edge of the screen. Let me scroll back up. There's more Othello water system on the north part of that than on the south. So you can see this photo is really high resolution. You know, the projector is limited on what you can see there. These do actually have main sizes on them. And if any of the council would like a copy of the figure in digital format, we can get that to you, and you'd be able to see the main sizes and where things are. So Adams County Water District Number 1 is the largest of the systems, and the city does already have a main out to that one. These other ones, you know, there would be some significant infrastructure improvements needed to connect them, and that's one of the major components of these feasibility studies, is looking at the physical improvements needed to get water to these systems, and then also looking at the internal improvements needed to bring the system up to the city standards if it's substandard. And typically with smaller systems, they're usually not up to probably City of Othello standards in terms of the mains and all that. So one of the things we discussed with the utility committee is, like, by doing these feasibility studies, we're going to find out basically what the bill would be to connect each of these, and then we can look at the whether it makes financial sense for the city to consider it, and then also whether or not the Department of Health would be willing to contribute maybe some grant funding toward that. So this is a nice first step for the city to look at this area of the city, see what's there, see what it would cost to eventually absorb them, and then hopefully use that to snowball it into some funding later if the city wants to proceed with that. So, council, are there any other questions about what the studies are going to look at? And then, are there any questions?
I have a couple.
Sure.
So, are you working in conjunction with Aspect Engineering, our water consultant,
so
with regard to the supply issue?
Yes, and the council has actually already assigned us a water supply study, specifically looking at your groundwater sources, and also looking at the possibility of expanding those sources either through modifying your existing wells or drilling new wells. And so ultimately that's probably an interim measure in terms of water supply. So there's been studies of the aquifer in the region, and most are in agreement that it is declining. The question is how fast and how long will it last. So when I say interim measure, you know, it could be 10 to 40 to 50 years. It depends on whose projections you look at and what's really happening, and how quickly either existing users or other users are converting from groundwater to potentially canal supply. So it's a big question you just asked, and maybe
it is a big one, and,
yeah,
and we're going too far out on
okay
it. What I want to focus in on, a couple of things. One of them is, in this study, are you going to actually do engineering drawings for running pipes to each one of these?
No, these are well,
you're not going to do
that. So they're not engineered drawings. They will be schematic layouts of here's how far it would have to run, here's the approximate size, but it won't be the detailed here's the...
So it won't be final engineering drawings, but it'll be... Okay, and so we go through all these studies, Jesse, and as you mentioned, we'll go back to the Department of Health and give them this information that they asked us to gather, this information, right? And so this will be enough information for them to come to some kind of conclusions?
Well,
about helping us, about what the problem is, I mean, yeah.
So the money that Department of Health put into this was to encourage consolidation.
Yeah.
It isn't to force the city into things, so it's information for the city. They will review it to make sure that, hey, we gave you this money, did you complete the work that was associated with that?
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't a specific string attached for them saying, okay, you took this money, now you shall build that.
It's, of course, because yeah, we don't have the money to do it.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
So that's easy.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So this particular study, is ASPECT a part of it, or is it just you guys working on it?
This one is mostly us. It will sort of have some overlap with that supply study in that these systems play into the long-term demands that we'll be estimating for the city. So we'll be coordinating with Travis on his comprehensive planning things on the overall population projections. And then there's sort of a conversion that happens, okay, that's population. What does that mean in terms of overall water use, you know, whether it's people or industry, you know? So we'll be coordinating with Travis on developing those overall water use projections for the water supply study. And very specifically on these ones, this sort of geographic area of Othello will be what we're looking at in detail on these water, on these consolidation feasibility studies.
So just this thought just occurred to me. Let's say for the sake of argument that we'll just pick one. Somerset West Water Association with 72 connections, their water has a 200 gallon per minute. And so they also have some undeveloped property in that area as well, but they just don't really have the supply of water to be able to adequately take care of all of it. So in our trying to fund and absorb these type of water systems, would they not then assess each one of these property owners in order to, in other words, there would be a participation from the local district in a cost share, so that we would, you know, when we're applying for grant money, local cost share is always a big component of, you know, receiving grant funding. So maybe that's outside the scope of what you're doing, but I feel like that is going to be a key going forward with some of these particular districts. Now, Adams County Water District, they're already on city water, but these other ones that are in this study are not. So they're going to need to pay. We're not going to just go build it for them.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so what you will have with these feasibility studies is an estimate of the cost to bring them in, and then that negotiation between the city of, okay, what do those connections actually bear in terms of sort of an additional charge on their rates to help repay those capital costs, gets looked at. The likely reality for a lot of these, if they require essentially almost a full replacement of their water system, is that it's going to be really, really expensive per connection. Mm-hmm. And that, what that means is that the city probably won't be real motivated to do it unless there are state or federal funders that will contribute some grants to make it cost feasible for you. So to get the Department of Health on board, you know, when they give you money, it's kind of a good thing in that it's like, okay, they're sort of vested in this.
Yeah.
And so then when you go to apply for the next thing, whether it's construction money or additional study money, whatever it is, they say, okay, yeah, we see what they were going with it. And Department of Health would like to see these consolidated because, like I said, it's in their mind, it's a benefit to public health to have these consolidated because it's a more reliable water supply.
Right.
It's, yeah, everyone wins.
And I think it's a benefit of these systems that if the city is able to obtain Department of Health and or Ecology or from the federal government mm-hmm. funds, that would subsidize what they're trying, you know, and provide them future uninterrupted water supply. Because as they're sitting now, they don't have that.
Yeah, they don't have the reliability that the city of Othello does. So, yeah.
Okay. That was all I had.
Okay. Council, are there any other questions that I can answer for you?
Okay. This time I'd entertain a motion to amend the Varela Engineering Agreement to include this study from the Department of Health.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Jesse. We'll move on to item 4.5, resolution to surplus concession stand items. We have with us Molly.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. After the pool closed on August 22nd, the pool concession stand was left with a number of food items that were not able to be returned to the various vendors because the boxes were open or it didn't total the original purchased amount. For example, our the items that we purchased from Pepsi, if we weren't able to make a crate of 24 of the same kind, we weren't able to return them. So we have a number of those items, which you can see in the resolution, that we were not able to return. And so, as in years past, we've contacted the Othello High School to hopefully sell some of these items back to, or sell some of these items to them for use in either their concession stand or their dog dish. But unfortunately, we were notified that this year there's been a little bit more strict rules as far as foods that can be served and offered for sale during school hours. So when I spoke with Ms. Roberts, who's the leadership teacher, she let me know that that might be a little bit of a hurdle. And after contacting her a couple times, I have yet to hear back, and we wanted to be able to donate these items before they were, before they, you know, go beyond their expiration date or aren't safe to serve to someone. So without having a firm answer from them, we do want to move forward with requesting that the council approve donating these items. The it's $513.61 worth of items to the Othello Food Bank. I've talked to Sharon Mobley, and she is more than happy to receive all these items. She said there's no rules as to what they can take, whether it's candy or pop or anything like that. So she was more than happy to take these if the council wouldn't mind approving their surplus and their subsequent donation to the food bank.
Any clarification or questions for Molly, council?
I just got a quick question. How did our efficiency do on our use of the concession stand items this year? I know in the years past we've had some leftovers, but what, how does this compare to what we've done in the years past?
Compared to last year, as I was comparing, or when I was looking at the what was sold to the school district and what was donated, we have the same amount of items that were donated this year as we did last year, and that's not including anything that we sold. So we were left over with just that amount. So I think with our careful ordering and waiting, not ordering until or with 3 weeks or 2.5 weeks left of the pool season, it helped us to kind of go through more of those items. So I think we were a little bit more efficient in that sense. After looking at our preliminary budgets, and that's something that we will go over in our Parks and Rec committee meeting, it does look like that we have done quite a bit more sales this year, especially with our, I believe it was our no tax items in the concession stand than we have in previous years. So.
Thank you. Council? This time I'd entertain a motion to approve the resolution declaring property surplus from the community pool concessions and subsequent donation to the food bank.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
The motion has been made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
Item 4.6 on our agenda is Crime Prevention Fund expense line for police explorers, and Police Chief Bill Shank has a presentation.
And I'll apologize for the cough drop in my mouth, but that's so I can keep talking. What we did earlier when we created the line item, we actually put an ordinance in front of council to authorize the Crime Prevention Fund. So within that, we've been collecting funds from, at this point, primarily the impound fee, the early release fee for impounded vehicles. Year to date, I think as of today, we've collected $3,200. Now, with that, we didn't create an expense line, and my intent with this was that we would use this for directly crime prevention related activities. The police explorers, the police reserves, and things like our block parties are the type of items that I would want to put under the Crime Prevention Fund. We would use this to keep these type of funds or revenues separate, but also like donations that are targeted for specifically those activities. But what this request is to create two expense lines and actually fund them so that I can actually spend some of the money that we've collected in that and that's what I'm asking for is $2,000 for uniforms and another $900 for miscellaneous to pay for the insurance and the dues to get the police explorers signed up. Currently, we have 23 explorers signed up in our program. The target was 25. I think we'll have no problem having 25 with a waiting list. As you probably many of you saw during the parade, we had I think 18 of our explorers out there, and during the block party event, we actually had 11 of our explorers out helping. So more and more, I believe you're going to see our explorers out in the community helping. What I was told is this coming weekend, I think they're putting a car wash together to help gather funds for the young man that was pulled off a skateboard in Tri-Cities. So I think we're going to continue, I know we're going to continue to see these explorers doing really good things in our community. This actually helps me fund some of the items that we're going to need. Within our 2016 budget, we're requesting more, but this takes care of this year. Can I answer any questions?
Council? Thank you, Chief. I think it's a great program.
They'll be doing additional fundraising for their program too, so this is just going to be some of the money that they'll need to keep it running.
Council, I need a motion.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
We have a motion made and seconded to approve this amendment to the Chief's budget. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 4.7, ordinance creating OMC 8.70 titled False Alarms. Chief?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What this is this is an ordinance in order that's designed to help curb some of the false alarms that we're receiving in our department. Currently, about 8% of the calls that we respond to are false alarms. To put that in perspective, in 2013, we responded to over 400, and in 2014, we responded to, I think, 380-something. So false alarms are a very significant portion of our calls. Now, what many cities do, and so what I've looked at, and this is a similar ordinance to what I had in Sunnyside, I want to avoid what some larger agencies are doing, and that's called verified response, and that is we don't go to false alarms until the owner of the alarm has driven there, checks to make sure they've been broken into, and then they call us to come investigate it. I don't want to do that. But what I need to deal with is some of the irresponsible alarm owners. For example, I have one that's already had 37 calls to their house in the last 12 months. And they have zero incentive to fix it. I don't want to say we're not going to respond anymore. What this does is once a quarter, so every 3 months, we will run a report in our Spillman system and we'll look at how many false alarms we've responded to each of the alarm holders in Othello. Once they hit three, they start getting a $25 charge for every alarm that we respond to after that. And that will help, in my belief, curb some, give them some incentive to monitor and maintain their alarms better.
Council, do you have any questions?
So we're basically giving them one false alarm a month?
Yes.
Would this carry into the fire portion of it too?
Yes, I was going to ask that.
Our focus is burglar alarms. We don't have a problem with fire alarms. We're not seeing a significant amount of false fire alarms. So at this point, that's not an issue for me. And I would say we continue to continue. We're going to respond to alarms. Whether we think they're being irresponsibly, in one case, irresponsibly managed or not, we're going to respond to them.
I was just wondering if the fire department already had an ordinance for responding to false alarms.
Not on our books.
We should dovetail them together.
At this point, we monitor both alarms and we receive both alarms. I don't believe we're having a significant issue with false fire alarms.
How many people do you have that have more than 12 a year?
I'm not sure.
We could have three in a day out at the plant, and those would be fire alarms.
I don't believe that McCain is one of the problem locations that we're responding to.
But, I mean, we get the fire department out there, you know, 2-3 times a month. And then they turn around and they got to go back, you know, but they've already called out. And I was always wondering whether or not there was a cost associated with that in some way.
There has been no cost associated with it.
There should be.
Council, one thing, you asked if the fire department has an ordinance on the books similar to this, and the suggestion was maybe we dovetail them. The actual proposed ordinance covers burglary alarms as well as fire alarms, so this ordinance will take care of the fire alarm side as well as the burglar alarm.
Thank you. Yeah, it's burglary, robbery, and so panic alarms and fire alarms.
So are the alarm companies themselves doing anything, or are they just blowing it off when they get false alarms?
Many times, depending on the protocol that the alarm holder has set up, alarm companies will either call the police department directly, or they'll try to call the alarm holder if that's the protocol. If they're in this case, the alarm holder in the 37 alarm case, the alarm holder doesn't even respond to their company that they've paid to monitor their alarm. Wow. So we're forced to respond. And I mean, just as council knows, we'll be very reasonable with this, and none of this is going to be a surprise to anybody. Our hope would be to get the message out to folks, give them warning letters for the first quarter. You know, if you're an alarm holder and you've received two alarms, we're going to send something to you to let you know how many you've had, just so that you can monitor it. You know, school districts are a habitual offender because they have so many people coming in and out all the time. This is, you know, we'll be reasonable as we work with folks.
So are these residential or businesses that are hitting these high marks?
The residential is the one that's causing us the most problems, or one of them. But I don't believe we have businesses that are habitually a problem.
I think it's good because I know you get the guy that has 37 motivated to fix it.
Right.
So initially you'll send out the ordinance to everybody and give them heads up.
We would send out a briefing, you know, some synopsis in the water bill, but we would also, with the alarms that we're responding to, we would make sure that we're getting them a letter.
You got mainly, I think there's about 3-4 alarm companies that come to town door. Could you give them this ordinance so they can make their purchasers or the residents aware that when they buy this is potential?
I think that would be fairly difficult with some of these because they're large corporations. I think the easier thing would be to notify the alarm holders as we run into them.
I think that this can happen because down at our trucking we had a sensor that when we had high winds, it moved that garage door and it'd flick it right away. So you guys, you know, have to get on the ball and call your provider to get it fixed. So there's, you know, stuff like that that needs to happen.
Yep. Okay, council, should we approve this ordinance?
Make a motion.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Chief. We'll move on to item 5, unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before the council tonight? Hearing none, we'll move to item 6 on our agenda, new business. Is there any new business to come before the council tonight? Okay, I have one item. Yes, that's fine. Spencer, go ahead.
Okay.
council members, as you're aware, we've started having our council budget committee meetings, and I gave each of you a copy of the schedule, and I just wanted to touch bases on this again to see if this is a schedule that's going to work for everybody. We've already done our first three. The number three one up there is law enforcement. This one right here, we just did this one earlier today. Then we have tomorrow at noon, street. Wednesday, water sewer at noon. Then Thursday, solid waste is that evening. Then next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, on the 6th and the 7th, we'll finish up with our last two. Special revenue funds, debt service funds, and then our parks and rec at the very end. Our next two are tomorrow. We have street. One after that's water and sewer. Are these schedules going to work?
I won't be able to attend those two.
Okay.
So is there somebody else that can?
So we have.
Go in my stead.
Is it a better time for you, or is it?
I'm out of town next 2 days, but all the way through the end of the week.
So John Lawless is on the street meeting tomorrow and the water sewer the day after that. We could do maybe a switch with someone, or
I'm committed to another meeting tomorrow at noon, but I could do the one for you, John, on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah. Mark and Gina are out. It's got to be Angel or Corey.
I'm on for tomorrow.
You're good for tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay. Tomorrow? Okay. Okay, so we'll keep the schedule as is with Angel Garza here and Ken Johnson in the spot there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Spencer. Tonight we have the pleasure of having someone in our midst who has distinguished themselves highly in the state of Washington, and that would be our own Spencer Williams. Spencer. I have a special presentation for Spencer. I received a letter from Sherry Amundson, the Washington Finance Officers Association Distinguished Budget Awards Chair, and she writes, "This is to notify you that your city has earned the Washington Finance Officers Association 2015 Distinguished Budget Award. This award is patterned after the Government Finance Officers Program and is the highest form of recognition in fiscal planning and budgeting within the state of Washington. The budget document is judged on meeting program criteria covering policies, operations, financial planning, and communications. In order to earn this award, the budget documents are critiqued by no less than two reviewers who have rated the document as meeting or exceeding a proficiency level. Your document has met all the criteria for the award, and tonight I have the distinguished pleasure of handing this award to Spencer Williams for his excellence in producing this budget document for us in 2015. Thank you, Spencer.
This is a really cool thing. I just accepted this at the WOA conference, the Washington Finance Officers Association conference, about 2 weeks ago. There were a couple, maybe five or six cities that they listed off, and we were one of them up on top of their screen. They had the city with Belgrade up there, so it's kind of cool. I had some other guys that I used to work with that I was sitting next to, and I got a couple of
Cool. All right.
Good job.
And it's very much a collaborative effort. The mayor, council, waiting the department heads. We work really hard on our budgets to make sure it's something that's going to work for the city and moving forward. So there's a whole piece of the back for everybody.
Spencer, I just want to express my appreciation for how
you make our job much easier as the mayor, as the council, as staff, in bringing these budgets, all the preparation that it takes to bring this information together. The other thing, I think you're, everywhere we turn, we just had an exit conference with the state auditor's office. They said that this is probably one of the, they were auditing a federal grant that we had received, and so it has to be audited that we spend it properly, that all the requirements were met and all the documentation was met. And he said this was probably the second time, I don't remember his exact words, but it was one of the top one or two exit conferences he's ever had. And so this is typical when you have someone who is excellent in their field, they bring everybody else into a place of excellence as well. And we just want to thank you, Spencer, for everything you're doing for us. We really appreciate it. Moving on to item 7, council will also receive department head reports. And having no further business to come before the council, I will adjourn tonight's meeting at 8:06 p.m.